This is Pawan Sukhdev. I'll try and take about, is it 15 minutes that you want?
Yeah, 10 to 15 minutes.
Right, to cover the basics of Thief and Thief for Nature, Thief for Business, and also to quickly summarize what finance might have to do with it. Essentially, Thief is a global project designed to make the economic values of nature visible. One of the main reasons why we lose ecosystems and degrade ecosystems and lose biodiversity is essentially that they are public goods and services, which means we do not have to pay for the forests which clean air or provide flood prevention or drought control benefits or provide carbon storage. We do not have to receive invoices from bees for the sake of argument in order to pay for pollinating services. We receive them free. But of course, as a result, partly due to natural factors, climate change, and partly due to the conversion and loss of natural areas into other uses, we tend to lose these systems, and their services. And the net result is certainly a cost to human well-being, and very often it can be a cost to business. And because sometimes it is a cost to business, it can also be a cost to the financial sector. We in the financial sector, be it on the banking side or the insurance side, are of course ancillary, so we are not center stage in this matter. We are, if you like, secondary recipients of the impacts of ecosystem degradation and biodiversity loss. Having said that, I think our secondary impacts can be quite big, and we can see one large story unfolding before us in the form of British Petroleum, BP, and perhaps let's just use that as a point of departure to see what kind of lessons we can draw from them. Of course, the worst possible situation is a potential fold-up of BP as a result of its rather large liabilities. And the question firstly arises is, even though we in finance are perfectly accustomed to the concept of value at risk, how is it that when it comes to assessing the impacts on ecosystems that business has, we don't seem to think in terms of value at risk, and certainly neither does business? And I think that is largely a question of the attitudinal issue that we have with looking at ecosystems as public wealth, which they are, public goods and services, which they provide, and also feeling that somehow society can take this for granted and this is a free lunch. But as anyone who spent time in markets knows, there are no free lunches. It's just a question of how long you have to wait for the bill to arrive. The implications of BP, or for that matter earlier disasters that have taken place, will unfold, but I hope that one of the implications is a greater focus on recognizing the value that is placed at risk by operations in business which have the possibility of creating cost externalities to society. And by that I mean any form of externality. It could be, as in the case of BP, the loss of fisheries in the ocean, the loss of business to ecotourism operators and travel, the loss of utility to private vessels which are moored along the marinas along the coast of the Gulf of Mexico. It could be any range of losses that take place. And all of these would be the externalities of the business of an oil company drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. Coming away from there into the financial world, how would we assess it? And how indeed more broadly would we assess risk? Well, on the bank side, we are not unfamiliar with risk. We face market risk, we face credit risks, we face liquidity risk, we face operational risk. And let us see how, if any of these are connected here. Now, market risk, as in the risk of losses due to exposure to moving exchange rates, interest rates, bond prices, equity prices, and so on. Not really, because it's not that these markets are more or less volatile thanks to the loss of ecosystems. In the case of credit risk, yeah, that's an issue we have to recognize, because as we are clearly exposed to companies which are significantly dependent on natural capital, in other words, the natural resources that we talk about, be they agricultural businesses, potentially at risk due to freshwater losses or soil fertility losses, or be they oil businesses at risk of liabilities due to ecosystem costs. The point is, we as financiers are potentially at a credit risk because our exposure to those companies can thrice away from where it is quite substantially. Our equity holding, if we have any in our portfolios, can also similarly take significant hits. And if we have taken, for instance, insurance, and the insurers who provided credit insurance, because these acts of somebody has backed off credit default swaps against us, or for whatever reason, then of course even the insurers are at risk. Equally, but more importantly, the issue on the bank side is one of reputational risk, because if we have financed, for example, significant projects which are in the nature of project finance, and those projects are exposed to reputational risk, then by implication, we as the financiers are also exposed to reputational risk. And this is exactly how the story of the Equator Principles began, where Herman Mulder, who's on the TIB advisory board as the head of risk at ABN AMRO, took up the issue which was brought to him by NGOs, you know, of the reputational risk that ABN AMRO faced as a result of some of their constituent clients engaging in businesses which had an impact on nature and on communities, local communities. And long story short, arose a set of principles on sustainable and responsible financing for projects. Coming away from the bank side and the financial risk as the key and credit risk as the other important constituent, let us look at actuarial risk on the insurance side, because as ecosystems degrade and as biodiversity gets lost, entire natural systems become more prone to risk. We've seen the impact already of increasing storms and cyclones, and we've observed certain communities in certain countries being increasingly exposed to the ravages of climate events, due to not least the fact that they are more exposed because water levels have risen somewhat in their area. But the reality is that these risks are sometimes connected with other businesses which are insured, and these insurance costs can escalate if actuarial models are incorrect. So we do have risk coming in here. Equally though, of course, these risks represent opportunities, because if, for instance, someone were to follow the logical, to its logical end, the recommendation recently made by Bob Costanza in his article in Solutions, in terms of companies having being asked to put up bonds or cash against ecosystems that they put at risk. The case I think he had was something like a $50 billion bond against the risk of the kind that BP undertook in its operations in the Gulf of Mexico. Well, one can argue about the sizing and the estimation of such defenses, or one can argue about the nature, as in should it be cash or should it be a guarantee or should it be an insurance policy. The reality is that whether it's a guarantee or an insurance policy or a performance bond or a bid bond or a performance bond, all of those three, insurance, guarantee, and performance bond, would provide business opportunity to the financial sector. So even in the worst case of a significant amount of insurance and collateral being provided by business to do business that risks nature, there is an opportunity for business. Coming away from the dire end that I'm discussing, but what about the positives? For example, Red Plus. As we begin to take action against climate change and engage in carbon-related projects, examples like the emissions from deforestation and forest degradation come up as outstanding cases of future business opportunity. This is opportunity not only for forestry companies who can run projects of Red Plus, which may be in the form of reduced monitoring, reduced deforestation, or managing afforestation, but also in the form of reporting and verification requirements, which could be satellite-based, could be the Google Earth type of technology that wins the contract, or management contracts for the entire system and setting up a small marketplace for green carbon or for Red Plus credits, as the case may be. So there are new opportunities coming to the fore thanks to these businesses. Or for that matter, if we look at fisheries as a case in point, where we are exposed right now to unsustainable fishing, there is an opportunity in terms of sustainable fishing. If we look towards freshwater, where there is a problem in terms of severe scarcity hitting countries, poor countries, and dry areas, but equally there is an opportunity in terms of markets for freshwater and other markets for ecosystem services. So there are new opportunities opening up, as just as there are risks that need to be recognized and tabled. There is also the need to start changing the way we record business, and this comes to the disclosure issue, because we at TIB have brought out the case that we should not end up with surprises, that we should try and recognize the externalities of the corporation by enforcing reporting requirements, just as contingent liabilities and post-balance sheet events are reported in the annual reports of the company, so also should be the natural capital or indeed human capital externalities of the business. And the reporting itself will create a degree of virtuous pressure in terms of rating agencies wanting to understand the information better that's being presented, and then that understanding leading to a different form of investor behavior, which in turn leads to more virtuous companies getting a better opportunity to show why they are different and differentiate themselves from the mass. There's equally a lot of opportunity in managing client flows better, such as certification and targeting the high moral ground of certified products as against products for the commonplace. So there's a certification opportunities in new business. And also that there are opportunities in environmentally friendly products, because there is certainly a market trend that we have observed and reported in TEAS of a increasing interest in environmentally friendly and ecosystem and biodiversity friendly products from amongst the richer world consumers. So here we have it: a large number of risks which can themselves lead to opportunity, a number of risks which need recognition and recording so that communities and people can understand better and hopefully lead towards a more responsible form of business sustainability. And finally, just pure new opportunities, be they in the form of insurance products or Red Plus products or payments for ecosystem services or certified products or eco-friendly products or so on. I think there's a lot that the world of nature provides the business, and I think there's because of that, of course, there is also an opportunity for us as financiers, the opportunity to invest in these new businesses. And I end with a simple example, of which is actually from the world of energy rather than from the world of biodiversity and ecosystems, which shows how sometimes it is not the quantum of financing, but actually the life cycle location of that financing which makes a difference. It is very easy. Any bank can provide financing for the purchase of motorcycles or scooters to families, but it's quite difficult to introduce financing for solar water heaters or solar home systems or solar PV panels. So the question is, what's different from one versus the other? Does one not provide utility compared to the other? No. The solar panel, especially a solar heater, actually saves energy bills. Does one not last very long? Of course not. Solar PVs and solar panels last longer than the average motorcycle. So why is it that it's possible for the motorcycle to get EV finance and for the solar panel or the solar heating system in the home to get not? It's basically a matter of education and product research and someone independent explaining to the lending institution that there is a new range of products which deserves financing. Sometimes it is the financing of that explanation, the financing of the research that is required, which is missing. It's not the actual quantum of financing, it's not the loan capacity, but in fact, small elements of the chain. So I think there is a lot of opportunity for the world of finance to look at microfinance, and there are examples of plenty of where microfinance does succeed, and for finance to look at new avenues of opportunity in terms of its next business drive. That's all I'd like to say for now. There is a presentation, but I think with the speed at which we are communicating now, that's sort of somewhat lumbering systems. I'm not sure if that has reached UNPRI. If it does, we can show you a little vignette on fisheries and how fisheries can be made sustainable. But I'd like to open the floor for questions and for the next presentation.